Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. This week we are going old school and best ofs and must-sees because we're talking about a new book from Turner Classic Movies, of all places, called Must-See Sci-Fi. Author Sloan DeForest, a film historian, writer, and actor, is responsible for putting together this list, and she's here today, and we have questions for her. Welcome, Sloan.
Thank you, Summer. I'm glad to be here.
This book came as a surprise gift for me. I didn't even know this book was out. I just opened a box of books from the publisher, and it was in there. I'm like, wait, what? I knew nothing about this book. Let me look into it more. And because I'm a classics, science fiction, classic horror fan, and I love seeing what movies other people put together as classics. So what inspired you to put together this book?
Well, it actually was the publisher's idea, if I'm going to be honest. You know, I could say that it was inspired by my lifelong passion for science fiction movies, and I just had to write about it. But actually, it was. But the impetus was the publisher. I had pitched them another book. It was actually about women in film noir. And they said, no, we're not going to publish a... They said, no, we don't like that idea, but we have a space that we need to fill. We want to do a must-see sci-fi book, and would you be interested in that? And I said, yes, I can also do that as well, because I am a science fiction fan, so that's really how it came about.
Bad on them for turning down the film noir book, because that's another favorite of mine that... Wow, okay, we'll talk about that off screen.
Yeah,
later.
Well, the reason they, you know, the only reason they did was because they had just published a Mark Vieira's book on film noir with Turner Classic Movies. I don't know if you're aware of that one from 2016. So they said it's too soon for us to do anything involved with noir. So that was the only reason, I believe, that they turned that one down.
It's like, guys, you can have more than one book with the word noir in it, just saying.
I know, that's what I told them. But you know how these publishers are. They have their own agendas. So, but luckily, I was fortunate enough to be able to write the sci-fi book.
That's excellent. Just as good. Yeah, the what was their scope for the book? Like, why 50 movies? How long? I mean, was it originally narrowed to a certain point in time? Was it from the beginning until the deadline of the book?
Yeah, those are all good questions. Those were my questions when we first started compiling the list, and it took us a while to sort all of that out, because I think they started with the idea of 50, because a couple of years back they published The Essentials Guide by Jeremy Arnold, and that was 52 must-see movies, and they based that on the fact that they thought, well, it's one movie for every week in a year, you know, 52. So then that sort of, I guess, this is sort of along the lines of the same lines of that Essentials Guide. And so, but they just dropped the extra two, and they've just been doing, there was also a book about musicals that came out in the same sort of vein late last year, I believe. So those two, they're just going with the number 50. They have their own reasons for that. That was Turner Classic Movies and Running Press, going with a 50 guide. I guess they thought that was a good cutoff number, because it really gets a lot of movies in there, but it's not one of those, like, you know, 1001 movies that you must see before you die. Those get so big and unwieldy that there's really only room for a paragraph about each movie. So I guess 50 is a good number to go into a little more depth, but still be able to include a lot of different movies in there. And as far as the scope, you know, of the timeline, that's what I wasn't sure about in the beginning. And I didn't take it. In the beginning, I started my list, I think, with Metropolis, and I ended it maybe in the 90s, because I thought, well, this is Turner Classic Movies. Are we going all the way up to now? So, but they did. They wanted to go all the way. So they said, no, let's start with A Trip to the Moon, 1902, and let's take it up to Arrival. That was their idea.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, the breadth of how that literally from 1902 to 2016, that surprised me. I'm like, wow, that's not usually what you see in a book that has a narrow, here are the great ones you shouldn't miss. I mean, they really came up to, I mean, they included Arrival, which is a fantastic movie.
And yeah, I was really happy that they wanted to include that movie and go that far back as well. So yeah, it's kind of unusual, right?
Mm-hmm. So what is the definition, your definition or their definition of must-see sci-fi, which is the tagline for this?
Well, that's a really difficult question to answer. As you know, as you can imagine, right? It's so subjective at the end of the day. We had some back and forth about it. It really boils down to what has been the most impactful on the genre itself or on cinema or on our world, our pop culture world. What has been the most unforgettable, what has been the most influential, again, on the genre, and maybe, you know, it was a low-budget movie, but something that so many people followed in the footsteps of. That was kind of what we were thinking about, and we were thinking originals rather than talking about sequels. I mean, Terminator 2 is a really huge sequel, as you know, and of course, The Empire Strikes Back. I don't know if it's considered a sequel, but it's part two of the series, right? And a lot of people consider that maybe a better one than the original. So it wasn't about what was better. It was about let's talk about the originals that were there first. So I guess the main focus was what was the most impactful and influential.
Okay, that's fair enough, because like you see, like the first one to make an impact. I mean, some of the movies that you include are some of, you know, my favorites, some of the ones that shaped a lot of the stuff. Like you've got Gojira, the original, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original, Fantastic Voyage, The Fly, The Time Machine. All of those are just classic movies to begin with. And they each in their own way made a statement, made either a statement about society, a statement about culture or ecology, or just made an impression just because of the visual effects or just the cinematography. I mean, I remember being blown away the first time I saw the original Time Machine, going, wow, what
right.
in the...
I did too. I saw it on TV, you know, as a young person. I don't remember how old I was, maybe 12 or 13 or something, and I just thought, I was really blown away by the, you know, the store window dummy, because to me, I was always interested in fashions. So I just was mesmerized by seeing the fashions change, you know, over the years. I mean, that's the least of it, you know, that's the least of it. But that's what stands out in my mind as being someone who was into fashion. I was like, oh, this movie really understands, like, the progression of time. And it just blew me away, right?
Yeah. So how hard was it to narrow your list down to 50? And how long actually did you work on putting this book together?
It was very hard to narrow it down to 50 because I wasn't just me. It was, you know, I had to work in conjunction with Turner Classic Movies, and they had some of their own ideas, and we had some back and forth about what movies should be included and what shouldn't. So that was a process. And it took a while to get it set in stone, so long, in fact, that I was already writing the book. I had to start writing it because I think I had about a six-month deadline from the time I signed the contract to the time it was due. So really, when you break it down, it ended up being about 5 months to really work on the book, and that's 50 movies. That's 10 movies a month. You know, that's really difficult to get to really feel like you have a grasp of the movie, because you have to watch it, you have to research it, you have to go to the library and read things about it, and you have to write it in an interesting way. And so it was a bit, it was kind of a lot to tackle. And I had written, I thought, okay, I don't want to come down to a crunch, you know, crunch time and have to be racing against the clock. So I'll get a head start. So I started writing some of the entries before we actually had the list settled. And that was a mistake. I ended up writing some things that they said, no, we don't want that movie in there. And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? I already wrote 1,000 words on it. So, yeah, it took us a while to get. And it wasn't so much that they were saying, no, that movie's terrible. We don't want it in there. But it was more about, as you mentioned, you know, or as we both discussed earlier, the originals. Like I had written 1,000 words on Philip Kaufman's 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because mm-hmm. that's one of my favorite films, and it's so, I think it's an important film, and I think it's a good film, so I just kind of started with that one, and then they came back and said, no, we're not including that one, because we're just going to talk about the original, and you can mention the remake when you talk about the original. So that's an example. You know, it was a trial by error of really getting the list settled, you know. So It's hard.
Yeah, I know. There is so much good, well done, even obscure movies that are just stellar. That it's, I would be just a pile of nerves, just going, how do I pick between this one and that one? But
yes, and you know, it's never going to please everybody, no matter what you pick.
Oh yeah, I have questions for that later, but that's for later.
Okay.
What movies did TCM leave out or ask you not to include that you were unhappy with? Movies that were like, man, really? I have to leave this off my list?
Yeah, there were three, and I managed to get them all three back in there. So they were movies that I ended up writing about. There were quite a few that they cut off, but the main three that I really fought to get back in there were Alphaville, Barbarella, and A Clockwork Orange.
Interesting.
Those were three that they had left out, not because, I think that Alphaville, they said, had just barely was edged out. It wasn't that they thought it was, you know, that there was anything wrong with it. It just wasn't as popular or as influential, they thought. So they kind of, it didn't make the cut. Barbarella, I think, you know, they were sort of like, it's not that great a movie. It's pretty cheesy, which I don't disagree with. But I wanted it in there because it doesn't, just because it's cheesy doesn't mean it doesn't have important, yeah. It doesn't serve an important place, especially in pop culture. And then A Clockwork Orange, they knew that it was a great film, but they thought, we don't know that this is really science fiction. It's more dystopian. It's more just a dystopian future. So I was able to convince them that it was science fiction, because the Ludovico technique that they use on Alex, you know, that's a fictional science.
Yeah. Okay, I'll let you have that one. The
yeah.
Because I always considered A Clockwork Orange to be more just dancing on that edge of dystopian horror, just because. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Barbarella is a landmark film. It might be cheesy, but it's a definite landmark film. So yeah, that one should be there.
I agree. I'm so glad you agree, because I thought it was just me at first, and now I'm seeing all these people who really like Barbarella. So
yeah,
glad
no.
I fought for that one.
Yeah, no, that one's definitely one of those. Yes, it doesn't make the beautiful statement, but it still made a statement at the time when it came out.
Yes, I agree.
So how much research did you do for the movies once the list was settled? Because I have to say, telling our listeners, the book is a trade paperback-sized book, and just seeing whoever did your photo editing, selecting the stills and the poster images for the different movies, went way, way above and beyond the call, because there are some gorgeous photos in here. And that's the reason I wish this book were coffee table-sized, just to have the larger versions of those images, because there are some gorgeous shots in there.
Yes, thank you. I agree. That was my one complaint about the book is, oh, I wish some of these images could have been larger. Yes, so I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. But yes, I picked them out with help from David DelVal and Manoah Bowman, who both have extensive photo archives in horror and sci-fi. So, yes, we put a lot of work into choosing the photos. So I'm glad to hear that, you know, you think it paid off.
I do. Just I love seeing the stills, especially from a lot of the older black and white classics, because a lot of those were lost or are buried in somebody's archive somewhere dry rotting away. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, digitize these and give them to me now.
I know. I got really fortunate because David Del Valle, as I mentioned, Del Valle Archives, he had some of these just really rare things. Like, I'm looking right now, I'm flipping through the book, and I'm looking at Kathleen Burke as the Panther Woman. Just a gorgeous, oh, wow, gorgeous photo from 1933, Island of Lost Souls. And you don't see that, you know, it's not out there on the internet as you might see some of the others. So there, I got some rare images in here. Really fortunate.
Nice. Just the pictures, the attention to detail in which pictures were selected to go along with each, I guess, essay article about each movie really shows the love and the attention to what details other fans of these movies or people who might become fans of these movies could be interested in.
So nice. Thank you. Well, it's so important. I mean, the visuals and sci-fi, you know, I mean, that's, sci-fi is such a visual. I mean, visuals are important to every movie, of course, because it's a visual medium, but it's particularly in science fiction, you know, some of these images, you've never seen anything like them before. And so it really draws people in. And that was another thought in our minds. You know, we wanted to draw people in by having these very arresting images. Hopefully we succeeded.
from my point of view, you did. There were, like I said, there were a couple of movies on the list where I went, really? So I'm going to ask, AI, artificial intelligence, the Spielberg movie, how did that get on the list? No, so to me, it is a gorgeous film. It's gorgeously shot. It's gorgeously filmed. But there's just something... For me personally, the story misses. I mean, we're talking, you know, home run swing, corkscrew into the dirt, miss the ball by half a mile kind of miss.
Well, I can see that. To be honest, someone at Turner Classic Movies wanted that movie to be in there. I originally did not include it on my list. They put it in there, and I thought, okay, they must have a good reason. And I really rewatched it and rewatched it. And I thought, okay, I can see. I don't always like the movie, frankly, but I can see why it should be in this book. Because, you know, if for no other reason, it's a landmark collaboration between Spielberg and Kubrick. And it's just, there's something fascinating about it. The first time I saw it, I didn't really like it. On repeated viewings, it draws you in, and it's not always successful, you're right. But it's something, it's almost like a train wreck where you can't look away. Not that I'm comparing the movie to a train wreck. I don't think it's that bad. But there's just something compelling about it, and even when it fails or it goes in those directions where you're like, I don't really think that it should go in that direction, it redeems itself somehow by its set design, and it's visuals, and something about it is redemptive to me. And also, if you look at it from the standpoint of Barbarella, for example, as we were just talking about, you know, as time goes on, that movie becomes more beloved because there was just nothing like it. Well, that's, I think, a fair way to look at AI. You know, how are we going to look at it in 20, 30, 40 years from now? There's nothing like it. And maybe it will age better than when it was first released.
Okay. Now, the other one I had a big in was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes. And I don't remember, to be honest, if that was my idea, if that was Turner Classic Movies' idea, or if that was Manoa Bowman, who also had some input on the list because he had a fantastic photograph collection on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I really couldn't tell you how that ended up in there, but I can see it because, again, it's like A Clockwork Orange. Like you said, it kind of dances on that edge. It's not really science fiction. But as I think I said before in another interview, we decided it was science fiction enough.
Mm-hmm. Because I just
science fiction enough for the book.
Okay. It's a personal choice that someone made because they have an affinity with the movie or an appreciation of it that the rest of the world has not caught up to yet.
Yeah, I really like the movie. I didn't fight for it or put it in there, but I was glad it ended up in there because, again, on repeated viewings, I grow fonder and fonder of it, and I feel, again, there's nothing else out there like it. And I really, when I had first seen it years ago, I just watched it as you watch a movie and think, that's interesting, whatever. And then when I was researching the book, I watched it from the perspective of science fiction. And when you watch it from the perspective of science fiction, it takes on a whole new dimension, really. It did for me. And okay. I thought, there's so much science fiction going on in this movie, but it's not on the surface.
Okay.
It's sort of behind the scenes.
Okay. I will accept that answer and
okay.
deal with it. But no, just from a visual standpoint, there were a couple of other movies that maybe I would have put in, in place of AI, something like Tron or the original mm-hmm. animated Ghost in the Shell, which are just both of them are visually stunning. And Tron was mm-hmm. groundbreaking because, those kind of computer graphics in 1982 was unheard of.
Yes, I agree. And I think I did have Tron on my original list and it was edged out.
Oh.
So, if you replaced AI or another movie with Ghost in the Shell and with Tron, I think this book would still be, perfectly valid. I mean, that's just goes to prove that it's subjective. I mean, everyone's going to have a different 50 movies that they would want to see in this book.
Sure. Would you do a follow-up or a online supplemental?
Perhaps. I thought of something that I wanted to do that was sort of a branch off of the tree of this book, and that would be tracing the progression of women in science fiction movies. That's something that I found really interesting as a woman watching all these science fiction movies, to see how we went from, being victims to being a little bit empowered in them, where at least there's a woman scientist. Of course, all the men are like, no, you're not going down into the killer ant hill by yourself, you're just a girl, and she has to fight to do that. But still, it was a small step forward. And then you get Barbarella, that's its own story. And then finally, in 1979, you have Ellen Ripley, huge step forward for women in science fiction. So, I find that fascinating. I might do something with that. I was thinking about maybe doing a talk, like some sort of demonstration on women in sci-fi.
Oh, that sounds kind of cool. What else in this vein would you do? Because just flipping through this book got me thinking about, could there be something similar for horror? Since the constraints of this book were so far into sci-fi, you had to eliminate fantastical movies like Conan and Lady Hawk and Highlander, which in them, mm-hmm. In their own right are iconic films. And we have fantastical movies going back to the 40s and 50s. I mean, I remember, I can't remember it now. I'm drawing a blank. I had it on Laserdisc. The 40 Thieves, Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves, I believe, is what
name
was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just gorgeous.
With Maria Montez.
Yes. And I think, mm-hmm. is that the one that was with Sabu?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he's in it as well.
Yeah. And just the imagery of the genie that was done in what, 1930-ish technology was just blew me away the first time I saw it. So, yeah, there's a fantasy or fantastical genre of movies that could be covered in a similar book, in horror, and there's just so much out there that just made impressions on us as movie viewers that just could be explored. So, If you have
I think Turner Classic Movies is doing that. They're doing different topics. Yes, I don't know that they have a horror one in the works, but I would imagine that if this series is successful, they'll do several different genres. Like I said, they did the musicals, the sci-fi. They're working on, I can't remember what the one they're working on now, and I'm working on one. It's going to be the 50 most powerful women in films.
Now, is that going to cover all genres with the women?
Yes, all genres.
Nice.
All eras.
Nice.
Yeah.
I see a chapter on Hedy Lamarr already.
Yeah. I've already written it. I've got 8 days to finish this book, so it's mostly written by now. Yep. Sorry, we're already there.
Nice. So what else in this vein or in a different vein would you want to work on with science fiction?
Well, it's interesting because I was also, last weekend I went to, with the American Cinematheque at the Egyptian Theater here in Hollywood, I introduced Invasion of the Body Snatchers and The Thing from Another World, and we did a book signing with my book there. And, oh, it was so much fun. I love those movies. Those are two of my favorites. And I started thinking about really doing something that hasn't been done, and I don't know that it could be an entire book because it's so limited, but maybe a screening series or something with sci-fi noir crossover, because, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is very much a film noir and a science fiction and horror as well. It's a lot of different things, but it's very noirish the way it's shot. You know, it's got those off-kilter camera angles and the deep shadows, and it's a man running for his life. It's very noirish. And there's a couple of other sci-fi movies that struck me as being quite noir. I mean, Blade Runner is one example of one that's intentionally taking noir conventions and futuristic science fiction. You know, there's a few. So that's something that interests me.
Cool. Yeah, there are handful of original Outer Limits and Twilight Zones that fall into that category too. So you see that frightened look, that off kilter shadow, that crazy camera angle, and you're like, yep, noir.
You're right. That's probably why I loved Twilight Zone as a kid, and I love film noir, you know, and science fiction. It really was a kind of a cross between those certain episodes.
Now, this book came out the beginning of May. Are you still doing any appearances for it where people can catch up to you and say hi?
I don't know. I think this may have been the last one that we just had last weekend. So, but there may be others. You know, if there are, I will post them on my website, SloaneDeForest.com.
Cool. And how else can people catch up with what you're doing, keep up with your next project? The website, are you on like social media as well?
I'm not a big social media person, but I do, someone who helps me with social media and I have recently started a page or an account to promote the up-and-coming book. It doesn't have anything to do with sci-fi, but it's going to be Dynamic Dames. The book about the women. So we've already got an Instagram account going for Dynamic Dames and Twitter. So that's something that people can keep abreast of if they're interested. Otherwise, my website will list out events.
Excellent. Well, we will include a few links back to your website and your Instagram so people can catch up to you on their own time. I do recommend people check out the book if you're a fan of classic sci-fi. Just for the pictures alone, the book is more than worth it. But Sloan has written some really cool things about these films, even though that I have issue with Turner Classic Movies for including a couple of them, but we'll let that slide for now.
But what was your favorite that was in the book?
Favorite that was in the book, probably, maybe.
Now I've put you on the spot.
You have. The ones that were included that are amongst my favorites were The Matrix, Jurassic Park, the original Planet of the Apes, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, I'm going to cheat here and look at the table of contents again.
Yeah.
the fact that
Oh, and speaking of the table of contents, I have to mention when we were talking about your complimenting me on the book's design and all the imagery, I have to mention Jason Kaiser. He did a fabulous job designing the book at Running Press. He designed the table of contents and all the pages. So yeah. He did a great job as well.
And they got Roger Corman to do the foreword, which is so cool.
Yes, I know. Very lucky with that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Gojira, Day the Earth Stood Still, Terminator, Blade Runner, The Matrix, mm-hmm. Jurassic Park, RoboCop. The first RoboCop was mind-blowing to me. Since they went up to Arrival, not including something as visual as like Tron or V for Vendetta or Pitch Black was sort of like a, why not?
That was a mark against it for you.
Yeah, well, it wasn't
but
a mark
then we would
against
have had,
it.
What would we have cut? We would have had to cut some things to put those movies in there. It gets pretty tricky.
It does. But, it does. Yeah. The choosing, the coming down to the choosing, I can see where that could have been an issue. But that's what geeks argue about till time stands still, right?
Yes, you're right. I would not want to take that away from any sci-fi geeks. That believe me, go ahead and argue.
We shall do that. Sloan, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
The book is Turner Classic Movies Presents Must See Sci-Fi, 50 Movies That Are Out of This World. Sloan DeForest spent so much time putting together this book. It really is worth a read. We will have links to that and to her website. But we will return with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award. With weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock. Peter Watts. Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pohl, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
I always love talking science fiction and horror with other folks who are knowledgeable and fans of the classics. Sloan was wonderful to talk to, and I can't wait to talk to her again about more stuff that she's working on. But one correction, the movie that I couldn't remember was actually The Thief of Baghdad. Sabu was also in a movie called Arabian Nights, which was the other one she was thinking of that had Maria Montez in it, but the one that I used to actually own on Laserdisc was Thief of Baghdad. And one of these days I should actually go see if it is available on streaming or on disc or something somewhere. My collection is woefully thin these days, but that's a whole nother story that we won't get into right now. But we have some more indie horror and indie sci-fi discussions coming up soonish, and actually another documentary coming up, discussion coming up, so that'll be a lot of fun. One that a lot of you have already heard of. I will just not even tease it and make you wait for it because we still haven't settled on a interview date, but there's some indie filmmakers who are up-and-comers who we will chat with in the next week or so. That should be fun. But in the meantime, if you have any suggestions or comments or questions about classic sci-fi and horror or indie sci-fi and horror, feel free to call in with those questions. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, and Krypton Radio. If you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Those reviews do help with our profile and help with other people searching for the show. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Slice of Sci-Fi there. We're also on YouTube and Facebook, Slice of Sci-Fi, in both of those places. And, of course, the website, sliceofscifi.com, with its fresh new theme, a cleaner design, a more mobile-friendly design, and HTTPS-enabled, just like Google demanded. We also have Writers After Dark, where there are a podcast with interviews with various authors, screenwriters, and comics writers. Plus, we have book reviews, comics reviews, slowly getting up more content more frequently over there. So keep an eye out there. I want to thank everybody for your pledges through Patreon. Every pledge helps. Every penny goes to help support keeping the sites online, the media flowing. So thank you everyone who is donating. And if you would like to add your support, the place to go to is patreon.com/sliceofscifi, where you can sign up for a monthly pledge. Or if you just want to do a one-time donation every now and then, there's a paypal.me link in the show notes. I also like to send out my heartfelt thanks to Side Fried, the geek rock band closest to my heart, for the music that accompanies this show. They did a wonderful job. I will never, ever, ever get tired of it because it's rock and roll and it's a little bit geeky. And yeah, I'm a rock and roll girl. So if you want to check out more music by them, you can go to their website, side-fried.com, or look them up on YouTube and enjoy some of their very, very nerdy videos. That's just, you're in for a treat if you've never seen any of their music videos. Head on over there, check them out. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.